We are up to the beginning of Siman Kuf Hei Ches. And here the tour. I'm going to start writing down who's taking passes because I really want people to start reading. Somebody had a sore throat. Rafi, are you better? Okay. That sore throat is always a good excuse for a pass, and I'll trust you that you're telling me the truth. Okay. You need a good amasla if you don't want to read in shul.
Right.
Okay.
Now I need to
know
how
to do it.
I'm tired now?
No. Everybody, you got, how's the simple doing? How'd it go, all right? Okay. I'm sorry? Okay, fine. Go ahead. Rafi?
Start with the Torah?
Start with the Torah, yeah.
Dvar Torah Hashem, Dham Tzimayim, Dvar Yishem Tuvah.
Okay. So the Torah says that really there's only five damim tmeim beisha, but today that nismayit habikius. So they're mitame everything. The Torah doesn't state it in this fashion, but this is a very important klal in Psak. The Rashba says this probably somewhere in the Torah Sabayis, and it comes up later in Ksamim, that a chisaron in Bikiyus is not considered even a safek, but rather you machmir. In other words, you can't treat, sometimes you put together a sfeik sfeika and sfeika drabana lakula. That's only if it's really genuinely a sfeika d'dina, as suggested by the Brayson of Avodah Zarah Daf Zayin. That's the, by the way, the makor for sfeika d'raisa l'chum, sfeika d'rabbana makula, comes from Tosefta and Adios quoted in the Gemara of Avodah Zarah, which we just saw a part of. It's the same Gemara that talks about not asking a shayla twice, you know, for one person and to the next. That very same Gemara quotes this idea that when you find one chacham is oser and one chacham is matir, and you're not sure what to do. So if one is gadol mechaver, you follow the gadol bein lekula bein lechumra, and if they're shanin, the Gemara says that you follow bishal Torah halach achar machmir bishal sofrim halach achar mekil. That is the earliest marker I'm aware of. The idea of sveika d'rais lechumra, sveika d'rama lekula. One of the things that means is that a suffek in who to paskin like in itself is actually a suffek. So a suffek in metzias and a suffek in who to paskin like, that's called a suffek. A suffek because of your lack of yedia, your lack of bikiyus, generally, not that in this particular situation, but there a chlal is not even considered a suffek. You can't be mitzaris sefer sveika. And here, when it comes to the colors of blood, so vadai, if we're not sure how to be, you know, mavdo bein hadamim, even by ksamim, which are the rabbanon, you're not going to say sveika the rabbanon lakula, because a suffek in bikiyus is not treated as a suffek. Okay, that's point number one. He mentions also that that white, there are two maros Torah dimensions, white and green, whether the green is, whether yarok is green or whether it's yellow. There were those who had an issue with yellow itself, although Tosus in our sugya points out that the whole, even Akavya Shita is only by yellow, yarok yellow, not by yarok green, because there's no aspect of red whatsoever to green. And finally, the Torah adds a comment, afidum yeshbo smichus dam hu av harbe. What does smichus dam mean? You have to translate it. There's almost a contradiction in these terms. What is smichus dam? You're correct. In other words, texture. Texture, consistency, that's probably what smichus dam is. The interesting thing is he says, who av harbe. Now the truth is, I don't know if menstrual blood is any different, but I do know what blood is like. And blood is not, I mean, it's certainly more, I don't know if the term is viscous or not, but it's certainly thicker than water, and hence the expression, blood is thicker than water, even if it's actually not true, in life, not in the physical context, but in the analog that's meant to be. You know, the pasuk, and it's against the pasuk in Mishlei. The pasuk in Mishlei says, Tov shachein karov me'ach rachok. Okay, and that means that blood is not thicker than water. Better a close neighbor than a distant brother. So if there's another substance that's coming from the woman's body and it's not blood, it's going to be mucus, and I would tend to think that mucus is much thicker than blood. So it's a funny kind of lashon, v'hu av harve. And this particular, yeah, Yaakov?
There's this thing contrasted with just color. If it looks like
Well, you mean something that's in a water base, you mean?
Yes, something like
that. No, but what, in other words, I guess...
You're just comparing a yes as a zero ratio to statement, which state is safe and thicker.
Okay. No, you mean the ratio is eager, not... Again, in other words, smichus dam and av harbe compared to what? Compared to water or something like that, or tseva.
Yeah,
it's thicker than, blood is thicker than tseva, which is primarily water-based. I assume it's thicker than tseva. Maybe I'm wrong, but that's what I assume. But if you were to compare it to the other likely candidate, in other words, you're saying green is tahora, even if it's av harbe. Adra, because it's av harbe, it's mucus. Right? That's what troubles me a little bit. Now, this particular question... became an issue later in a passage that the Beis Yosef quotes from the Trumas Hadeshen, which we are not machmir for. But the Trumas Hadeshen speaks of a situation in which the woman experiences hargasha, psichas piyamalkar. She does a bedika in fairly short order, and she finds one of these maros, and some type of thick, you know, some thick, relatively davar av on her bedika cloth. And the Trumas Hadeshen says, Midina, it's mutter, but he's choshesh lahachmir. We don't actually paskin that way, as long as she actually finds something. And she can attribute the hargasha to this thing that she found, and it's a mare tahor, even for us, so then we accept that it's tahor. Okay, so the Torah says that regardless of the texture of the substance, it's of one of these colors, then it is tahor. I mentioned yesterday that the Aruch HaShulchan discusses the question, so blue is certainly not an issue, and green is not an issue, and white is not an issue, and yellow is not an issue, and he talks about the issue of brown, which actually one could think has a slight redness, but he thinks this is davar pashut, that brown also is not. The color that brown might be considered the dull version of, he thinks, but he thinks it's too far removed, is black, actually. He makes reference to coffee. I don't know what kind of coffee he was referring to. But coffee, you know, ranges between. I should pay attention every Shabbos when they make the coffee at my house. But I don't drink it. So when they talk about having your coffee black, I don't know how black is coffee black. It probably depends upon which. It depends upon which, I suppose, which kind of coffee as well. Once you put the white in of the milk, obviously it turns the coffee brown.
They wouldn't have been using instant back then. It probably would have been pretty dark.
Okay.
Talking beans, they're pretty light.
I mean, I think the color of, well, I the color of coffee beans are brown or what?
Brown.
Yes, they're brown, but there's a range from like...
Right, well, dark brown to, right. Okay.
So we'll
have a chance to ask whoever comes in to talk about, you know, for a shear to us from Aros, so you get to ask, there are a few questions you may want to ask, and I'm curious to know what we actually do with brown. The Aruch HaShulchan thinks brown is not a problem. Okay. So anyway, fine, continue, Rafi. So that's the issue. So Maros basically now becomes the shades of red and the entire discussion of the Gemara basic and shades of black become essentially a non-issue where Matame all of them. Next.
Okay.
Stop for a second. So how do you know this? What's the marker for this din? No. An eid echa mem would be true, and generally it's true. But a woman comes in front of us, and someone asked me as well. No. 1 second. Okay. So let me step back and make one observation here. A couple of you asked me in Seder about this, and the Aruch HaShulchan makes this point explicitly. Believing the woman in this case, there are two considerations here. Number one, do you believe her that in her heart of hearts she means to tell the truth? Number two, do you believe that which she is conveying, in fact, is correct? There is a difference between a lie and something that isn't true. Some of you know my famous quotation of something can never have happened and still be true. I don't confuse it with that statement. That's a different issue. What I mean, not in this context, something, medrash is true, even if never happened, but something can be a lie and it's certainly not true, and something can be a lie, and something can be not true, but it's not a lie. What's the difference between the two? The intent. the intent of the person uttering the words. If the person utters the words and believes that they are true, that is not a lie, but they're still not true. If a person knows that they're not true, that's called a lie. The halacha recognizes this distinction, for example, in the context of Shvuah. The Gemara in Shvuah, I think it's around Daf Chavav or something, tells a story that two Talmidim of Rav were arguing about one Rav said. Each one of them swore that Rav said one way, and Rav came back and said, and they asked him, what do you say? And he picked one side. And he didn't say you're right and you're right, but rather he told which one was right, and the other one said, oh, and I took a false oath, and Rav said, no libach ansach, which means that, no, you actually swore truthfully. When you swear, the facts may be wrong, but you didn't take a shvua sheka. Shvua sheka is when you know what you're saying isn't true. So there are two considerations here. Number one, the one who could raise is the woman lying, and number two is what the woman's saying true. We are not concerned about the woman lying in these circumstances. Why? Because a number of you already sort of, Rafi, you were, you know, reaching for this, which is that the woman has an ego here. She could just say, women don't bring, most women do not bring every mara to a rabbi. If they look at the bedika cloth and they see something that looks green, and, you know, at a certain point, especially if they brought this before, they're not going to bring it to the rabbi. At some point they know at least things that are just not even in the parasha of asking a question. So this woman could have chosen not to bring the mara to anybody. So she's acting fundamentally in good faith. She's no point in her to come to the chacham and to lie about the color that she saw. There'd be no point in that. I mean, I know you're thinking of Esav, who comes to ask Shilas, his father, because it makes him look good. But that's, you know, under ordinary circumstances, we're not concerned about that. We don't make our halacha based on a few mishugayim, right? So normally, a woman brings to ask a Shilas, and she provides certain facts. She's the menace. Aside from the fact, she's the menace on this, because Mika, why would she lie in the first place? Why come and ask the Shaila and then give the Rav incomplete facts? Daniel? So there is one example the Gemara has in Yevamos, not in that sugya, not the beginning of Yisha Rabba, but later in the 15th parak, I think it is, where the Mishnah says that where Eidecha B'Isha comes back, or the Isha Nemenes, and the Mishnah says that a woman is Nemenes, but she's not Nemenes B'Shas Nochama. And the Gemara goes on to say, if I haven't looked at this in a while, but I believe the Gemara says that if she says the concern B'Shas Nochama is that she witnessed him die in battle or something like that and made a mistake. And as if she said he died on his bed in the midst of the battle, while there was a war going on in that country, she would be Nemenes. The concern is that if she... Now, why don't you believe her then that he died in battle with Amigo, that she could have said that he died in his bed? The answer is, it's not because we don't believe her, it's because she might have made an error. In other words, she has Nemenes, that her husband died, fundamentally speaking, but if the circumstances are such that we are concerned that she made an error, a good faith, honest error, then we don't allow her to remarry on that basis. And the Gemara uses the expression, I think, bididami. In other words, she makes a dimyon, she thinks that in fact what she saw happened, and she means to tell the truth, but she's actually wrong. That's a separate, the reason why we're mamin, no, nemanus by an eidachad is rooted in daika mintzava. Nemanus, when she says, I saw him die, is not daika mintzava. The assumption is that she would not take the chance of his coming back and her really getting messed up. Right. Yes and no, because there's no onesh here. I mean, there may be onesh kafei shmaya, but no one ever finds out. Now, if someone botches a shaila in this area, there's no empirical facts to overturn that. The bedika cloth will get thrown out, and that's the end of the story. So no one ever knows if you made a mistake. However, in the case of Yevamos in the 10th parak, daika mitzvah, because the husband could walk back and someone could say, "Hi, honey, I'm home," right? And you got a little problem there. But the eid or the two eidim said, you know, or in this case, eid echad said he died. That's very nice, but the eid echad was wrong or lied. But here you're never gonna, you can't use daika mitzvah because you're never gonna get full clarity to overturn the earlier decision. So we are not concerned at all about the nemanus of the isha in terms of her wanting to tell the truth, but we could be concerned potentially about her making an error, that she thinks this is what she saw, but in fact it's really not what she saw. So the Torah quotes this first statement, that if a woman comes in front of us and someone of you asked me also, and again you'll ask this to the person who talks about Maris, why don't they make a picture book? I remember years ago standing at it can't be that long ago, going to YU graduation as faculty, and Rabbi Tendler was talking about this. This is before, so we're waiting to march down. So And he was talking about this, and he tried to persuade Rav Moshe about this, or something, Rav Moshe didn't buy it. I don't know. I could be misremembering. But I'd be curious, why doesn't anybody think to do this? I could think of certain reasons. But supposing somebody has some maris you can compare to, and the woman comes and says, it was like that. And I lost the batika cloth, but it looked like that. So what would the din be in such a case? So we saw the makor for this din is the braisa. The braisa says explicitly, and amenes yishalomar kazera isi velad, straight out of the Gemara. That's the situation where we don't have any bedika cloth in front of us, so the only basis on which we have to work is what the woman says. So v'les breira, what else are we supposed to do? Right? We don't have a grounds for being machwea one way or the other, so if she says that it looked like this, okay, we'll believe her. However, the Torah says, aval, okay, but if she says, she brings dam in front of us, and we think it's tame, but she says ploni was mitarli something just like this, not this, but kayotze bezeh, something that's similar to this. If she says ploni was mitar this kesem for me, or this mara for me, it's not clear why she's asking a second person. Unless, you know, it's one of those funny people we mentioned yesterday who's looking for chumras. But if she shows a similar shade, she says, this is what I saw, and you should know, by the way, Rabbi so-and-so was mitire this same color for me, so if we think it's Tameh, even if we're mesupak about the shade, so then the din is that we don't believe. Ain't so mchalea. Why not? Based upon what we just said, why not? Tani?
We have it in front of us.
You don't have to rely upon her, and the assumption is maybe she's making an error. If we think that this is a suffix or vaday tameh, then maybe she doesn't have bekias in this. Maybe she's making a mistake. She thinks that the chacham was mitar. It's not that she's lying, but she's simply making an error. And since we don't have to be samech upon her, and she's not a bekia in this is not her expertise. When we have some bekias in it, we're not going to be samech upon her. Okay, that's what the Torah says. So before we turn to the Shulchan Aruch,
would that rule work in the opposite? Or meaning, what if she was being more like, you know,
I think the answer is yes. If she said, this is what I said, I think the din would be the same. I think we would say that we're not selling upon her. I don't think it's a function of, it's not a function of kula versus chumra. I think it's a function of, we don't give her bekias. We don't, you know, attribute to our opinion. You say, okay, you think that he was mitami something, but if we look at him and we say, this is a mari tahor, then that's also sufficient. I don't think there's any reason to distinguish. Okay. If you take a look back for a moment, I didn't ask you to prepare this, but you saw this in the Bach, but we might as well just take a quick look in, you saw this in the Taz, I hope. If you take a quick look back in the Bach, early on in this simen, Dibar Maschel Umatzasi, he writes, "Matzasi kasev al shem gadol echad, morena harav zanil kat shekibel meisha chachama, kishenimtza kesem levan al achar shirachta isha bechamed itmeya shederach adam leslabein laachar harachita." I suspect that this is really bad science. The post can think it's bad halacha, but I think it's also bad science. But the theory was, he heard from an isha chachama that if a woman goes to the Beis Hamerchatz, that the blood, her blood, her internal blood, you know, damnida, will be whitened by going to the Merchatz. Okay, I'm sorry to tell you, but you can wash blood probably all you like, and you're probably not going, unless you remove the red blood cells, you are not going to actually, it's not actually going to turn white. I don't think, even just in female anatomy, when a woman goes to the Merchatz, I don't think that water, a sufficient amount of water would actually get inside the woman to ever do anything. Unless the woman consciously bathes herself, even there it's not going to do anything, but unless she made an effort certainly nothing will happen. It's highly unlikely the issue went to the Merchatz, that the blood became whitened by the waters. Yes, Yosef?
Yeah, so just the Beit HaMikdash was the mitzvah?
Yes. No, not in this case. It was the bathhouse.
What's the term used in the Merchatz?
I'm sorry?
What's the term they use? Like
mikvah. A Beit HaMikdash Merchatz is probably Mayim Shu'uvim. Almost and certainly Mayim Shu'uvim.
It's like kind of strange. I'm assuming they're separate, like men and women, Beit HaMikdash.
Sometimes.
We're talking about medieval Europe Ashkenazic Jewry. It's safe to say that while I do repeatedly stress that Eastern European Ashkenazic Jewry has been mythologized and turned into something it never was, it's a probably pretty good bet that the time these Achronim are writing, certainly before the late 19th, early 20th century, and I suspect even then, there were separate bathhouses for men and women. I would assume so. Anyway, so fine. Thank you, AJ. So then he writes, Achar chathei shanim boi lai chacham zaken Ashkenazi v'heri li kasa b'shein Moreno Rav Yaakov Margolis shekibo mipiera Moreno David Lantait kodem nisiyaso l'eret Yisrael sha'isha shiyatsi mimena smichos lav v'av l'achar sherachta v'merchatz kemo shnayim v'shalosh shos hi tmeya sh'derech adam l'slabe mechamas rechita v'talina d'adam nidahi tmeya misafik v'nira shalpi ha'ra zo nagu nashim sh'lodelech l'merchatz b'yamim sh'bein levishas levanim l'tvila v'hu shachashishu pentir adam v'yislabin lach rechita v'tiyah tmeya v'hi lo yada. Okay. I don't know if that's why he speaks of such a minhag. Women do generally, I don't know if this is different in the Bach time, but I had a professor of English who told us that her mother said, and mothers in Europe said, in Europe they used to bathe only a couple of times a year. I don't even remember why that would have come up in the context of an English literature class, but the comment has always struck with me. In really cold climates, people need to bathe less often and are going to bathe less often because it can be somewhat uncomfortable. So anyway, but that's what the Bach writes. The other Achronim dismiss this. We'll see quick briefly the Shach and the Taz. This is really more based upon a Metzias. Metzias is correct or not correct, probably in this case not correct. But a more fascinating issue is going to be raised by the Bach in the Dibur Maskel V'isha Sheroa Mara Yarok. It's a couple of Dibur Maskels after this. And he writes as follows. V'isha Sheroa Mara Yarok V'la'achar sh'nithyabshu haksamim Nasu k'tzosav adumim mikol sevivav. So around the perimeter of the kesem, it turns a little bit red. I don't do Mara, so I can't tell you a Metzias, but the Aruch HaShulchan writes, despite the fact that the Gemara makes it sound like that as time passes, the maros get lighter, the Aruch HaShulchan says we do see this in Metzias. So nira de medina tmeah hi, the Bach thinks it's really tmeah. Now, there are really two interesting questions here. Well, number one is, did the Chacham look at this mara before it dried out? Or is he first being shown the mara when it dries out and being told that it actually looked different when it was first came out, but the Chacham didn't see it there? That's an important question, as you'll see in a second. Chudarmina beperakol yad b'shachar d'cheshenekar min aguf hu loke umashchir mashal adam maka l'cheshenekar hu mashchir. So sometimes things change. Kavasei chashinam b'yarok zeh d'shekenekar min aguf hi loke v'nase yarok chesnish yabesh chazar tzas alamareyu. We're afraid that maybe the blood was really blood, and then it, in the akira min aguf it turned green, but when it dries out, it's returning to its original state. V'ika lememar da'ad kan lo pligi chachamim a'akavya b'malala da'amar yorok milke loke ela b'nishar yorok mitchiloso v'yad sofo. Maybe the chachamim just say that green is not red blood shalaka when it's always green. Hasam hu d'lo chashin v'yad sofo. Hasam hu d'lo chashin an alikoy avo kishnishtana lachar shnithyadesh v'nase adam mitosav shatr chashin an alikoy af l'rabbanan u'midina hitmea. Okay, so the Bach first statement thinks that everybody would agree, Medina, that if you have green blood, and when it dries out it turns red at the corners, that she's tmeya meikar adin. But then he goes on, ulchein, kishiyavo mara yarok v'lovim l'fam orav odalach, Lo yora bo davar atri is yabish, which is a big chumrah in its own right, forgetting about what will happen to her, because the woman may need an answer. Depends when. You know, if it's the midst of Shivan Akiyam and she's got four more days, it probably doesn't matter. But if it's the seventh day, you don't have time to wait for it to dry. So the achronim, you know, go nuts about this bach, because it's a very radical shita, which is that the chacham doesn't paskin b'masha ein avroos, but rather he anticipates what might possibly happen in the future and therefore has to wait to paskin. The first element of the bach is a very important conceptual question as well, which is, how does one judge a mara? In other words, assuming that the chacham, you know, there are two ways of reading the first scenario in the bach. One is that it was brought to the chacham when it was yavesh already and red around the edges, but the chacham was told that it was completely white when I first saw it on the bedikah cloth. Or is the bach talking about a case where it was brought to you when it was still moist and you happened to let it dry out and then it became red around the corners? Now, the significance in that, if the chacham saw it in effect at both occasions, is that when is the ikur time which we judge dam? There's a tshuva of the Chacham Tzvi that's quoted in the Tischei Tshuva, which is somewhat disputed. The Chacham Tzvi, and many, the Aruch HaShulchan seems to accept that principle, is that the Ikar Mar Adam is when it comes out of the body. And theoretically, if we could, that's the only time we really want to look at it, because things change afterwards, and we don't really want to look at the changed state, we want to look at the original state. But less brave rough, we don't see a Mara until later, until an hour later, 2 hours later, 3 hours later, 24 hours later, Ein L'dayin L'masha Ein Avroos, that's all you can do. But in the ideal state, if we were to know exactly what the blood looked like when it came out of the body, so really that's the mara that in fact we would follow. Anyway, but these are two really important issues that are related to each other that the Bach raises, and we will see in the Nosei Kehilim of the Shulchan Aruch that they are not particularly pleased with the Bach's suggestions here. You know already why. Why? How do you know, Avi? Why did you know? I picked you for a reason. I didn't just pull you out of a hat because you spoke to me about this issue. Where's Hart? Is Hart here? Right. Not here? He's not here. So you're stuck alone. You're hanging in the wind. But you asked me about this Gemara. The whole story with Rebbe. Like the Gemara says on the Masha Dayan Ein Avroos. And the only reason why Rebbe turned around and was Metame ultimately was because he realized that when he saw it at night, he might actually have seen it correctly. His concern seems to have been. His concern that may have been that maybe I didn't see it clearly at night. But once he realized that this blood was continuing to change, he reverted to the first time he saw the dam at night, and because it looked tame at night, even though maybe it was his vision, nonetheless, Rebbe ruled that that's the Ikar Mara that you have to follow, and you don't worry about what happens later. You don't wait, and clearly you don't have to wait for what happens later either. Okay. Anyway, so if you take a look, turn to the Shulchan Aruch for a moment. Simon Kuf Teichet again, Sif Aleph. Thank you, Rafi. And you were reading till now? Is that right? Okay. Same few people volunteered. Daniel, go ahead. Really? Okay, I forgot. Right. You fooled me. Go ahead. Yeah, first read the Mechaber Amon, then we'll read the Shach. It's red, it's tame, period. Shava, wax, they're wax. I mean, I could see, I mean, our wax is, well, I don't know how they treat it. My wax is white, but I'm sure you... Yep, could be. So, Ohazav, I assume it's a yellow color, yellow wax. Ohazav. If it's green, and the Ramah adds, V'chein. Yeah, B'lashon Ashkenaz, blue. B'chlal Yaroku. This is not a statement about the color spectrum, but a statement to Halacha. It's the same status as green blood. V'afilu.
V'afilu.
All right, that's coming lafuke from the position of the Truma Sadeshen, who was uncertain about this, and the Rama adds the chain. No, that's the Truma, against the Truma Sadeshen, the im. Ayin lekamon. Okay, so if she experiences hargasha, which we still have to talk about, that will be as we introduce ksamim after simen kufeches. If she experienced hargasha and then she finds nothing, that's a different question. But if she finds a mari tahor, we attribute the hargasha to the mari tahor, and she is tahora. Okay. Mari tahor, excuse me. Okay, a couple of comments that are relevant in this context. First, in terms, the Shulchan Aruch doesn't talk about this, I think, about doing maros and when you can do maros. There's a Gemara in Megillah, it's an Agada. And so perhaps Ein Somchan al Agada, but it's the story of Avigail. The Gemara says there were 7 Nevi'os, it's on the bottom of Yudal Amal Aleph. Avigail was a Nevi'ah because she predicted David's being nichshal with another woman. But in the context, she comes to intercept David so he doesn't wipe out everybody of Nabal's family. And the Gemara says that she brought him a mare dam. And he says to her, v'chiro and maris balayla. V'chiro and dam balayla. And she says to him, v'chidon and dinin fashos balayla. You know, how seriously you want to take that first statement as a halachic principle. Again, it doesn't really, from the perspective of being agada, doesn't matter. The Chazal generally placed in agada correct halacha. In other words, you can sometimes use an agada as a raya to what the Chachamim thought, because they would have chosen to place in the mouths of biblical and other historical characters what they thought was the correct halacha. But in this context, given that there was a need to say that, because it was a setup for the line "Bechidan and Dinin Nefashos Balayla," which David had done, you know, to kill Nabal, he decided that Nabal was a Morid v'Malchus. So therefore, I don't know how much faith one wants to place in that line. And ultimately, we don't accept that line, particularly because Rebbe, the Aruch HaShulchan, first suggests that maybe that's only when they used to do maros of red, because to distinguish between red and red, there you can't do it at night, but between red and green, that you can do at night. Now the truth is, if the little I've done of maros or seen maros done, that was really like one shear, I wouldn't try doing that at night. You still need to see pretty clearly. The Aruch HaShulchan then goes to point out that Rebbe was Roe Balayla, right? We saw in our Gemara, the last Gemara we read yesterday, Rebbe did it L'Or Haner. And Rebbe was in a time they still did shades of red. So he says, by David, they had no candlelight. If by moonlight, you're not allowed to do maros. By candlelight, you can do maros. And that's, I think, a fairly logical principle in its own right. There's not so much you can do by moonlight other than maybe travel. So we do theoretically, it is permissible to do maros at night. I think that, again, you'll ask whoever does the maros, I'm under the impression that for the most part, Rabbanim who do maros do not like to do them at night, because getting the kind of lighting that you want isn't always so easy. They like to do it in sunlight, with sort of more along the way it was described in the Gemara. There's a story of someone, a particular rabbi, whose child went to kindergarten, and each child was asked what their father does. So this particular young child said, "Oh, my father goes out on the porch and looks at cloths in the sunlight," which I'm sure that the teachers were probably, I imagine, were a little bit mortified, but the rest of the kids probably, hopefully the child didn't say underwear, but, you know, probably the children probably just didn't get it. I hope they didn't get it. But anyway, but I think that people generally try to use, every time I've ever seen Amara done, it's using sunlight. So, again, with the Evid, you can do it at night, but it's not optimal. Okay. Also, in terms of the issue of brown, you can take a look if you want to see Makoros, the Pischei Tshuva in Sifkatan Aleph, quotes from the Sidrei Tar and others who assume that brown, like Klipas Armonim, which is the Armon, I think, is a chestnut. Is that right? Potterman? An Armon, a chestnut? Anybody know? Armon? No? Okay, I think it's a chestnut, which is brown. So they say that brown is a mare, is a mare tahora. Okay, an additional issue which is made is that if a chacham looks at a mare at night, the Aruch HaShulchan quotes this, it's in the Pesachei Shuv as well, if a chacham looks at a mare at night and decides that it's tamei, he's not allowed the next day to turn around and decide that, you know, he's looking at the light now, he thinks it's tahor, because it's possible in fact it was nishtana. If he's mesupak at night, and that's a different story. If he's mesupak at night and can't render a decision, then he looks at it the way he first sees it during the daylight. It's possible that it changed, but it's irrelevant, because essentially what that's deciding is when is the shas ri'ya of the chacham. If he looks at it and is able to see it, and thinks he's able to see it, that's the shas ri'ya, and that's when we say in the dayan al mashin of ro'os. If he feels that he can't see it, so then when he first looks in the day, that's the shas ri'ya sadayin. Okay. Any questions so far? All right, so now take a look in the go read the shach.
First one.
Okay. Now, what the Shach did here is subversive, and the Shach should never have written this. Now, why do I say that? And you know, though some of you know, I think that the Shach is like one of the sharpest of all the Acharonim. He almost never says anything that you can really seriously quibble with. Or nothing. You'd say, like, why did he write that? So it's not that what he wrote was wrong, it's that he shouldn't have written it because he undermined the purpose of the Shulchan Aruch. You see, you don't need the Shach. Why do you not need the Shach? Because you read the Torah already. You read the Gemara, you read the Torah. There's nothing added here except for the person who picks up the Shulchan Aruch and reads it and doesn't bother to look at the Torah in the Beis Yosef first. Mm-hmm. So, anyway. But of course, it's true what he says. It's Dvarim Pshutim. So anyway, now for Sif Beis. Huha lavnuni so. If you take a white shirt and it gets dirty, okay, it falls in dirt, and then you shake it out, it's not going to be a bright white looking shirt. It's going to be a little bit off white at this point until you wash it at least. So that's what they talk about. A mari beged lavan shenafa lav avak. Okay, and you shake the avak off, so it's you know, it's a dirty white shirt. So they say that that's also that's tahor. With the low, ketrumas hadeshen, the simen reish membav. The reason why Daniel is struggling with some of these things is because he's using the old standard edition, so he's challenging himself. Whereas if you're reading from the printed editions that most of us are reading from, it's much easier to read. That's not a criticism. In fact, mine is Truma Sadeshan is expanded.
Okay.
So I'm defending you, not accusing you.
V'chol
misha shamati. Gimgum Kal. Nobody disagrees on this particular issue. Fine. Sif Katan Gimel. What? It might be on the same page. I depend on how printing fell out. There's more shach than taz here, at least initially. Kosev Abach.
Oh, yeah. Kosev Abach. The Hainu. Kishenishar Yarok is Tilato. The Ad Sofo.
The Bach says Yarok is only tar when it's green from beginning to end.
This thing time wise or spatially?
No, time wise. We all agree that if part of the Mare is tar and part of it's Mare Tame, it's Tame. Okay? Aval. Nisyabesha kesem. It turns red on the fringes. So that's the first premise, that it really is tameh, even though initially the Mara was actually she was completely tahar. Nonetheless, it's tame because now it turns red. And now, as a second, an outgrowth of that, lachain.
Lachain, tishiyavo mara yaro kolavan, lifnei ha-mora, ve'odo lach, goyavo dvar ad shizgavesh, ad kam l'shon.
Okay, so that's the Bach that we saw. The Ein.
The Ein Ogen came. The Nira, the Ahsoke, Real Tav.
So achzuke reyes and lomachzukina. We don't look to create problems when they're not there in effect. Uchadamrina beperek elu treifos. Fine, you don't have to read the rest of it. So the Shach thinks that is not choshesh for this aspect of the bachumi or not. We certainly don't make one wait to see that it dries. The interesting thing is that so that addresses sort of one half. Of course, in the dan mashen avos, you don't have to wait. But what if you did wait? Or what if you saw it at both stages and it was white initially, and then it turns at the fringes later? So if you look in the Pischei Tshuva, if you look in Os Gimel, I'll read the Ayin b'Minchas Yaakov, the Sidrei Tara. The Sidrei Tara is probably printed in the back of your Shulchan Aruch. Shganim Chol Kol Abach uGedolu Mizeh Kasta B'Tshuvas Chacham Tzvi Simin Mevav Da'afilum Ra Hamorek Shahaya Lach V'Hayel Omare Tahor V'Achar Kach Kishnis Yabesh Nimtza Mare Tameh Tahora. Even if it later turns red, if when the Chacham first looks at it, it's Tahor, then that's the Psach. The Azlinan Tamid Basar Yitziyam and Aguf Hein LaTameh O LaTaher Ayin Sham. He quotes the Achronim later, you know, go back and forth on this particular issue. You know, there's a very funny description of this that you find in the Aruch HaShulchan, which speaks to a certain conception of how things work. It's not actually totally out of the question, but the Aruch HaShulchan assumes, I think, like the Chacham Tzvi. Let me just read you the passage. The Aruch HaShulchan, in trying to explain the position that's metame, says that v'yitama machmir b'zeh nirim yishum d'sof sof halo ein, this is a sifkat on tezvav, sof sof halo einenu roos ta'achar zman nirim b'haktzavos ka'adom. At the end of the day, you do see some red showing up at the fringes. Uve'emes kama pa'anim ra'inu kein. The Aruch HaShulchan says we have seen this happen any number of times. Omnam gam zeh asi shafir, this is still not a problem. Then move on. It is understood, shal pi hateva, based upon nature, kol davar lach yesh lo nianuach tzas, achen yishyabesh legamre. I don't know how to translate this exactly, but it's almost like the liquids have things mixed into them. So when they're distributed evenly, so you get an even color, and that's really what the color of the thing is. But if you take out the various elements and you separate them, you could almost create any color out of it. So even this white mara has some red particles in it, if you want to call it, and in the process of drying, they all get thrown around the margins. But the mara fundamentally is white, because all the white may have some type of this other color. Yosef?
No.
So he says, ulefi zeh, kol ha-mara ha-shatuach, nidchafu k'tasam l'k'tasam arak tzavos, v'nimtza shebek tzavos nischabu kol imke ha-lechluchish al-pnei kulo. In other words, all the red parts accumulate at the edges, but that doesn't mean that this mare, on average and on the whole, is red. V'lachain b'chol hemshech de'amariso, in, I guess, throughout the middle, it gets duller, less red. U'vachtzavos neschabru kulan v'nepchu l'mare acheres. And now you get a different color at the edges, because that's sort of distilling from the white the red parts. Miyuah kol panim ein ze ikar hamare ela mi osef mi mekomo shonos. It's really gathered from different places, but that's not the ikar hamare. Uledugma in nachsar v'nefshitena afnei kubo. If you were to stir it up again, lo yisra odem kol. You wouldn't see any redness. Imkein lama netamena. Okay, then he suggests that the Yesha Kasav Atam, it's interesting to read this, because the Tam might be right, although you have to explain certain things. The Yesha Kasav Atam, the Shina Ha'avir Ma'beged Garmulus Adem, the oxidation with the Beged, causes it to turn red, the Lonirake, but he thinks it's not correct. Why? To Imkain, Lama Garm Rachbach Tzavos. Why did it only happen at the edges? The answer may be is because there's less other liquid at the edges. But nonetheless, it's interesting to watch him grapple with the signs. The Aruch HaShulchan thinks that it's not a problem if at the beginning, if you see it at the beginning, it's completely clear, and then you see it later, and it has it reddened at the edges. The Aruch HaShulchan says that is not a problem. And certainly the Mora doesn't have to wait in the first place to see that. However, if no one knew what the Mara looked like at the beginning, he doesn't say this, but if no one saw the Mara at the beginning, and then you come afterwards and you see it's red at the edges, I'm pretty sure that we regard that as a mare tame. If the shas re'iyah, you see admumis, so then we regard that as tame. Yaakov?
So are we relying on the Inzadayan al-Nashay in the road, or we are actually trying to determine if it's uterine blood?
The point is we saw it when it was white at the beginning. So the Dayan saw white. He saw maritar. The question is, what do you do with the fact that it seems to turn red later? Does that, and we do see this on a regular basis, so what does that mean? So the Aruch HaShulchan is just explaining why that's not an issue.
But if it does, I think he said that if it does become red, then white.
And we haven't seen it earlier, and no one says, I can tell you it was white earlier, all white earlier, now it's turned this way. If someone just finds it and doesn't know what it looks like, it's the first time you see it, then you say, in dayin alamasha in avroos. There's a hint. Are you? I suspect that if she says it was completely white, I mean, the truth is, if it were completely white at the beginning, you wonder why she would bring it in the first place. But if she says it was completely white at the beginning, I would imagine that we would say that that's fine.
She's bringing it now because there's red
edge. Okay, so if she were to inform us of that, I suspect we would say that it's tahor. But if we don't know, and then we see it this way, then we say in the dying of the Mashiach of Rose. Yeah. Okay. The Taz goes on at great length about this, but I don't see that you can read his Hasagos. By the way, what was the relationship between the Taz and the Bach? That's correct. The Bach was the Taz's father-in-law. That did not stop the Taz from arguing many, many times with his father-in-law. The Bach, as I've said before, tends to have some very, very interesting shitos. Let's put it that way. Okay, Sif Beis, whoever took over for Daniel, God, read Sif Beis. Nemenes. Okay. So the Shulchan Aruch quotes here really straight from the Torah, the Brice and the Gemara, and the Maskana of the Gemara by Yalta was Teku, but the conclusion we actually reach is that if the woman says that a Mara like this was declared Tahor by a Chacham, and we look at it and we think it's a Mara Tame, we assume that she's making an error, and even if we're misupach on that. Now, one question that is raised, I mentioned this yesterday, and here the post can talk about it, is the question of a husband looking at the maros of his wife. Now, the concern obviously is that, as I mentioned yesterday, kol hanagayim adam roach chutz minigei asmo, but technically speaking, this is not nigei asmo. But the concern is, the question is, what is the concern? The concern is that not that he's going to paskin knowingly wrongly because he wants something, but rather he's going to make an error, because anything in life that requires a shikul hada'as is very easily prone to shochad. It's very prone to shochad. What is the din if you have someone who's a sone, not a sone gomor, but a sone, is a sone kasher le'edus? The Mishnah says machlokes, we probably paskin that a sone is kosher leidus, not a sone gomor. Is a sone kosher for dayanus? And the answer is no. We learned this last year. I don't know if you remember. We did this in kosher mishpat. A sone is pasul for dayanus. Why is that same sone not pasul for eidus? Because for an aid testifies to what he saw. Now, I know there's a lot of modern research on the unreliability of eyewitness testimony, but that said, halacha relies upon eyewitness testimony, and while yes, the memory and time can color what one truthfully states, even though it may not have happened. Then you know you hear all of these stories of people who don't intend to lie but end up reporting incorrectly what they saw. So the concern of the halacha is not. We are concerned sometimes with Edom making a mistake, but fundamentally more concerned with Edom lying. The assumption is that if it's not a Sonei Gamor, it's not some Akalkalas, it's for sure that the person is going to lie in court and state something wrong. So that's if it's an aid. But a Dayan is not about, it's about truth, but it's, but there's a much greater degree of Shikul Adas. When you're a Dayan and you're presented with a series of facts, and nothing is absolutely dispositive, so you have to make a decision. You have to weigh likelihoods. Which do you think is more likely? And there, it's very, very easy to be swayed by a person's bias, right? Because if you hate one of the Baalei Din, then, you know, generally your outlook on life is you don't want things to go well for them. And, you know, it's very easy to see that it's odd here. And there's a much greater concern that a Dayan without intent will be swayed. So Shochad, that's Shochad of a kind. It's not Shochad, someone handing you a bribe, but it means a bias. If you have a reason to be biased, a person's decision can very much be distorted in things that require shikul hadas. The concern is, what about a chacham being roa maros ishto? So Tosus raised this issue because he asked, why was it that Yalta didn't bring her maros to Rav Nachman? It's a very interesting question also, not why didn't Rav Nachman look at Yalta's maros, but why didn't Yalta bring her maros to Rav Nachman? She was the one deciding. So it's interesting, and Tosus gives a few answers. Tosus rejects the possibility of saying that a Baal cannot be Roa Maros Ishto. Tosus rejects the possibility, assumes that even by Negoyim, a Kohen can be Roa Nige Ishto, according to the Chachamim, Kol Negoyim Adam Roa Chutzmi Nige Atmo, but Nige Krova of its Mutter. So Tosus rejects the possibility, quotes a few suggestions, and you have a Gemara in front of you. One of the suggestions is that Yalta is that Rav Nachman was a Dvaki in Maros. Not all the Chachamim in the Gemara were Baki in Bechol Kitzvei HaTorah. Today there are Talmidei Chachamim who think because they occupy certain positions, or even because they know a lot in certain areas, that they're Baki Bechol Chadrei HaTorah. That unfortunately is not true. There are very few big Talmidei Chachamim who are Bakiim in Torah Shebichtav. There are some, but very, very relatively few. And just because one is a gadol in halacha doesn't mean that one is a gadol in machshava, and that's a confusion that's often made by many people. And so you see already in the time of the Gemara, there were Amoraim who didn't know Tanakh so well. There were Amoraim who were balei agada, not balei halacha. So it could have been Rav Nachman was a dayan; he was a baki in dinei mamonos. But perhaps in Maros Dam that he didn't do. That is one possibility. Another possibility, Tosus quotes, is that she didn't want to bring it to him because she felt that it would interfere in their relationship, that, you know, she would be, he would be katzba. I don't know why, but I guess, you know, why. I think they used to, you know, hand these aspects of human biology were once part, a regular part of the life, but I guess she felt that it would be potentially an impediment to their intimate relationship, and therefore she was reluctant to do so. I don't know, Tosus may have one other answer, but the bottom line, the Shach writes here, in Sif Katan, Zion in the middle, you may as well read the Zion for us. Sif Katan Zion already the whole thing. V'chein isha zo,
the Shach.
Isn't that referring to a friend? Yes,
okay.
Right? That's how a lot of these things work. They hear about it from their friends. Okay. Hereisi gamani leploni chacham.
Itir,
and he was mitayer. So Cain perish Rashi. Umivio habach. Yeah, if she brings us a stain, she's not in a menace to say kazeh, kayotze bazeh, tier li ploni, you know, chacham. But if she says this kesem that you are looking at, ploni chacham with metaher, she's in a menace.
It sounds like the book.
No. Well, no, because she has a mar. No, the first part, that's what was in the Shulchan Aruch. She has a mar that she experienced. She shows it and says something like this, the exact same shade. In another context, Pliny was entirely. There we assume she's making a mistake. But in the second case, when she brings the object itself, it says Pliny Tzilias HaKesem, Zo, or Marezeh, so the din Damzeh, or Kesemzeh, so then she's Nemenes, V'chein Mashma Le'el, V'chok Yamin Meperek HaMadir. That's the Gemara that says Pliny Tzilias HaKesem, she's Nemenes. Now, the Gemara doesn't say Beferish there, that's the Makar, right? That's one of the Makaros for this whole Nemanos of Isha. The Gemara doesn't say there Beferish that she still has the Maridam. Now, that could be a case where she said Pliny Tzilias HaKesem, that's what she told her husband, and she threw the thing out, and it's not in front of us. Who says that if she brings the Kesem to another Rav, and he looks at it and thinks that it's Tame, who says that we believe her? Okay, so it's not explicit, but it would seem, it's almost implied by the Gemara there, that if a woman is not believed to say Kayote Bezeh, Tierli Ploni Chacham, but she is Nemenes to say Zeh, Tierli Ploni Chacham, because no longer, the assumption is that she's not lying, and at this point you're not relying upon her subjective judgment. She's holding the cloth, whatever it is, that she actually showed the other Chacham. Kasvu Atosos. Right. And that's the accepted halacha. Again, if the chacham doesn't trust himself, that's a separate issue. But mikar adin, a husband can paskin, certainly can paskin the shilas of his wife, even those things that are nogea to him. And some level, it shouldn't be a shock. Just because you're the rabbi doesn't mean that when you get a yoredeh shayla in the kitchen, whether the chicken is treif or kosher, that your wife asks, because you don't say, well, you can't answer the shayla because you're biased. It could be the only reason this is raised by maros dam is because they're so subtle. Not as much today, but still maros. Again, at the end of the day, all we've done, you know, we say you don't require bakias, but you really do require bakias. I've mentioned this before. Rav Schechter, I will try to ask him, actually, but I heard Rabbi Neuberger once say, Rav Schechter, and he's sort of a shitas yachad, and it says that you don't need any training for maros, because the whole point is we did away with the all the fine shades of the Gemara because we weren't bakiyim. So basically, if it doesn't look red, it's not tamei. However, what really has happened de facto in the world of psach is that all we've done is redraw the lines, right? So now you have to decide, is there mari admimus in it? But you still, there's a line that crosses from being mari admimus to no mari admimus. And that's a very fine line, which once again requires this expert, you know, type of training. So because it's something that requires a certain type of shikul hada'as, and it's not, forgiven the expression, maybe it's not red on white, it's not black on white, therefore there's a greater concern that a person, when he has a negius, is going to be told by shikul hadas. So nonetheless, the poskim say a husband can be, not only can he answer the shailas if he's a baki in halacha, but if he's a baki in maros, he can also be roa maros ishtar.